Sir.
This is a warning. The sound in this podcast is atrocious. Sometimes it's too quiet, sometimes it's too loud. I'm trying. This is book part eight, and I need to add some stuff that should be on the end of book part seven. I got some timeline confused. So Benjamin had gone back to Germany, and I was gearing up. My mom got me a beautiful winter coat to head over to Germany to see Benjamin because I hadn't seen him since the tour ended. And I showed up in Dusseldorf to see him, and I thought he was going to be, wearing Guatemalan clothes and tie-dyes and happy and friendly and sweet and everything like I knew him. That's how I know Benjamin. So I showed up at his friend's house, got the address, and walked into this kitchen full of his German friends. And remember, I don't speak German. So I walked in, and when you don't speak the language, you're more observant with body language, okay, and vibes. They were mocking me the second they saw me, because keep in mind, I don't care what anyone says. Germans hate Americans in general, all right? They just do. You have to earn their trust and earn their friendship, and it's just an uphill battle. And these were ultra cool West Germans that were just like, "Oh God, you're dating that? Seriously? Like an American?" And Benjamin wasn't like running over to me and hugging me and kissing me like I thought he would. And he was wearing completely different clothes. I didn't even recognize the way he looked. He had his hair all slicked back and very short. And he was dressed all in black and pretty tight pants. And he kind of looked rather Sprockets, if you've ever seen that Saturday Night Live skit where Mike Myers is making fun of Germans, very Sprockets. They were all like that, actually. They were, and I was. I think I had my hair in ponytails, and I had little red bows in my hair, and matching red lipstick, and a red sweatshirt, and some leggings or something. They just looked at me like I was from a different planet. They were not welcoming whatsoever. They were pretty nasty, actually, and I just was like, "Wow, I came all this way thinking Benjamin's madly in love with me," and so I spent some time there, and then my next destination was Apeldoorn, Holland. And if you listen to part seven of the book, that's when I found out I was pregnant in Apeldoorn, Holland. And then I called Benjamin in Berlin and I said, "I'm pregnant." And he said, "From who?" And then I went to see him in Berlin and he took it really badly. But I also bopped around to Liverpool and Findon, Worthing, and Scotland again, and all the stuff. And eventually, I made it back to Dusseldorf to meet Benjamin's parents, Frauke and Klaus. They were no longer married, but they got together to meet me. They wanted to see who this American girl was who was supposedly pregnant with Benjamin's baby. Frauke was also not very welcoming. Klaus was super friendly and nice from the get-go. Klaus has always been nice and friendly. Frauke was like, "I need to know the timeline. How did you get pregnant? Weren't you using protection? Did you not take the pill?" And I was like, "Yes, I was on the pill, but I ran out. And we were like following the Grateful Dead. I couldn't like get a new supply of pills. And it just happened." She wanted to know the exact date of ovulation, the date of conception. She had a calendar out and everything. She really wanted all the details. She was doubting it. And she's like, "Well, our family for centuries has been just German, pure blood German. And now, if this is true that you're pregnant with Benjamin's baby, it's our family, our Stein family is no longer pure blood." And I was like, "Okay, I'm sorry to crash the party." And Benjamin and his father thought it was a good idea to go to Berlin and explore some of the sites. So this is before the wall came down. So we went to Berlin. And We took a little tour of East Berlin. It was a big ordeal getting into East Berlin from West Berlin. You had to exchange 50 German West marks, 50 Deutsche marks from the West. Yeah, you had to exchange that money so that you spend it in the East. So you had to pay to get into the East. Okay. And it was this weird bridge that you had to cross over at Friedrichstrasse, overground train. You had to go through this thing and go through a lot of customs and passports and all this stuff. You couldn't just walk into East Berlin. It was really hard to get in. So we're walking around. I remember them showing me a statue of Karl Marx and Lenin, Lenn. I mean, Lenin, not John Lennon, Marx and Lenin. There was a giant statue, and they helped me climb up onto the lap, and there's a picture of me on that statue. And I remember walking down the street through East Berlin with them. There was no colored lights, no colored signs, no billboards. It was a very drab, beautiful buildings, but very drab looking place. And so I was hungry because remember, I'm eating for two now. And I remember opening my backpack and I'm just eating a banana. I'm walking behind them. Ben and Klaus are ahead of me and they're talking, talking, talking. And I guess I'm walking too slow. Because I'm looking around, I'm eating my banana. Benjamin stops walking and he looks at me. He goes, "Was? What are you doing? You ignorant American, put the banana away." I'm like, "What? You can't eat a banana in East Germany. It's fucking rude. Put it away now." And they were so shocked and angry that I was eating a banana in public. Or anywhere. I was like, "I don't understand." He's like, "It's so rude. Put it away." Apparently, East Germany hasn't seen a banana since the wall went up because they had some kind of trade issue with wherever bananas are grown. So, East Germans did not have a banana for 50 years, right? And I'm walking down the street eating one. I didn't know. How the fuck am I supposed to know that? I mean, I could have studied it, I suppose, but I didn't know. And I remember walking into shops thinking, oh, I have all this East German money. Like you got a lot of East German money for 50 German West marks, West German marks, whatever. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to go into a what's it called? Department store at Alexanderplatz in East Berlin. There was this department store. It looked really ugly. There was no fancy sign. There's no sign at all. You just go in. And it had three or four floors. So I'm like, I'm definitely going to be able to find something in here to spend all this money on. Nah, there was shelves with soap, but not different brand. It just said Seife, which means soap. All the same packaging, all beige and ugly. And the shampoo, there was only one brand, shampoo. All beige and ugly, ugly labels. No fancy colors at all. And then there was toothpaste, all the same packaging. It's just toothpaste, not special flavors, nothing. And I was like, that's weird. And the clothes were really ugly and drab. And I'm like, oh. So I went to a bakery. I'm like, sure, I'm just going to buy a bunch of bread and bring it back. The line at the bakery was around the block. Outside, there was a line around the block for the bakery. And the bread was just as drab looking as the buildings and the clothes and the ugly skin-colored cars that they all drive. They drive these cars called Trabis, Trabi, Trabis, which is short for Trabant or something. They burn gasoline and oil together like a lawnmower. You had to be on a waiting list for 10 years. Wait, no, you had, the waiting list for a telephone was 10 years. The waiting list for a car was 25 years. That's what I heard. So, like, you would get on the waiting list for a car as soon as you got pregnant for your child. So I'm like, okay, let's just go to the record store. They had a record store. I'm like, surely I'm going to be able to buy tons of records with this money. Okay. There was not one artist in there that I recognized. It was jazz and classical. I mean, and weird jazz, like stuff. I don't know. I apparently it was jazz. I don't know. There was no band whatsoever that we would recognize. You know, nothing from the West, nothing from the West whatsoever. So I'm like, now pass. Then we went to a restaurant. They have this giant TV tower. It's kind of like the one they have in Toronto, really tall, skinny TV tower. They call it the Fernsehturm or something. And they have a restaurant at the top that spins very, very, very slowly. It's a revolving restaurant. The food was really, really bland and boring, kind of like the food I had when I went to Russia in 2018 or 17. Yeah, just bland, disgusting. No flavors, no spices, just sauerkraut and schnitzel. And I wasn't eating meat at the time. It was just really horrific. I ate the potatoes. What the hell? No spices on the table. Yeah, that was East Berlin. However, West Berlin was extremely safe and clean and awesome. I know the wall was a bad thing, but let me explain. West Berlin was a cool, secret kind of country, a little party that only a few were invited to, so to speak. And when the wall came down, well, that's another story. That was November 9th, 1989. I'll get to that. I remember Berlin before the wall, and I know Berlin after the wall. And I'm telling you right now, the wall kept it safe. And yes, it's horrible that those people were separated by the wall. I get that. But there's pros and cons to everything. Anyhow, after that trip to Germany and all around Europe visiting my pen pals, I'm glad I did that because as soon as I had the baby, life kind of changed. I went back to America, to Douglasville, Georgia, to live with my dad for a while. And so now I'm back in Douglasville, Georgia. I finally got rid of my Dover, New Hampshire apartment and decided to spend time with my dad in Douglasville, Georgia. So I'm there and I'm 4 months pregnant, and I decided to take some of the money I had earned from Robert and Benjamin helping them sell their Guatemalan clothing at Grateful Dead shows. Take that money and fly to Guatemala because my bracelets, the ones I was making, they would take like 25 hours to make one bracelet. So I couldn't compete with the Guatemalans. Those bracelets that they were making were being sold for $2 each, three for five at Grateful Dead shows. The psychedelic friendship bracelets. So, me making my bracelets that were taking me 25 hours, I wanted at least $25 for my bracelets. And yes, I got the occasional hippie to pay $25 for my bracelet because they could see how intricate and beautiful it was. But some of them were like, wait, why should I pay $25 for yours when I can get this one over here for $2? So, like they say, if you can't beat them, join them. Although some hippies were pre-ordering, saying, I want one this wide, like 5 inches wide, like a literal arm band. I still have a picture of that one. That was the mother of all bracelets. Anyhow, I flew to Guatemala City, scared out of my mind because I don't speak Spanish. I don't know anybody in Guatemala City. However, I knew an American girl named Jennifer. Baton, no, not Baton. Her name's Jennifer. She lives in Panajachel, and she has two daughters that live with her. She's like, come visit me. I'm like, okay, at least I have a spring pad, you know, like a lily pad to land on. So I got off the plane in Guatemala City, and I'm like, where's the bus? The bus, I need to go to Panajachel. I just kept saying the word Panajachel, and people were directing me. It was pretty scary. Very dirty air, scary city, very crowded. Never seen anything like it up until that point. So then I was pushed onto a bus, get on this bus. And you know how normally, like a school bus seats 3 people per seat? Well, this bus, I was pregnant, so I was kind of being extra cautious, but there was 5 people squished in the seat I was sitting on, as where every other seat on the bus packed with like 5 people, and people were sitting on their laps, and there was people on the roof. This bus was so packed, I was like petrified, and it was a 4-hour trip from hell. They didn't stop so anyone could pee, and when you're pregnant, you gotta pee. So I'm like, ah, I was holding on for dear life. My fingers were clutched onto the handle on the back of the seat in front of me. I was clutching onto it for dear life because the bus was taking all these windy, curvy roads. And if you would look down over the side, it was like a really big drop off of a cliff. You know, there was a lot of cliffs, and they were passing people. The bus was passing people. I'm like, ah. Oh my God, this is a skinny, winding road. You shouldn't be passing people. But I can't speak Spanish. No one could speak English. So I was just keeping these thoughts to myself. And I also looked out the window and could see some buses at the bottom of the ditch. In other words, some buses didn't make it on that journey. They tumbled down the mountain. So I was praying to make it there alive. Do you think when I got off the bus in Panajachel that Jennifer was there open with open arms waiting for me? No. There was no cell phones. No cell phones. So I'm thinking it's about, what month would have that been? November, December. I think it was, let's see, October, November, December. Probably like January that I went there. So we're talking 1989, January 89. I went to Guatemala alone. Got off the bus in Panajachel. It was less crowded, super beautiful. And there were some people who spoke English. They looked German, they looked Swiss. I was like, I'm looking for Jennifer, massage clinic, Jennifer. Oh, yeah, okay. So somebody walked me to Jennifer's massage clinic. She wasn't there, but there was someone there who told me where she lived and walked me to her house up on a hill. And boom, I stayed there a whole month. The thing is, Jennifer didn't have any running water. She told me they collect rainwater all year in some big, I don't know how you would say, thing on top of a roof that collects rainwater. And she uses that, she drinks that, cooks with it. She didn't have a toilet, no plumbing in her house whatsoever. So I'm like, okay, where do I do my business? She walks me up a hill. 'Cause she's like on the side of a mountain, kind of on a big hill. You have to walk even further up from her house to the toilet. And the toilet was a hole, a really deep hole dug in the ground, and a wooden box. I have a picture of it somewhere. I gotta find it. A wooden box built over the hole. You sit on it, and the toilet paper was as rough as wallpaper. You sit on that hole, the wooden hole, and you do your business. So I had her take a picture of me sitting on that toilet because I do have an obsession with toilets. I think it's amusing. Probably became an obsession when I saw the picture of Frank Zappa sitting on a toilet for his infamous toilet picture, Zappa Crappa. So anyhow, and she had no electricity. No electricity, no water, no refrigerator. She just ate avocados every day. And if she had eggs, she got fresh eggs from the chickens and the hens at the neighbors. It was very interesting. No dairy, because there's no refrigerator. And when you're pregnant, you think, oh, I need dairy, I need cheese, I need milk. Zero dairy for the whole month. And I mean, I ate tomatoes and avocados every day, and once in a while, I found myself to a restaurant because it was super cheap to eat there. But I started throwing up after a week I got there. I'm thinking that rainwater might have had something to do with it, drinking rainwater. Oh, and bathing. You're thinking, well, how do you bathe? Well, she was just up the hill from a really giant lake. Off the top of my head, I cannot remember the name of the lake, but it's famous for having two volcanoes. This lake has two volcanoes. Let me Google it. Panajachel Lake volcanoes. Volcanoes. It was so beautiful. I took lots of pictures, of course. Okay, so there it is. Panajachel is isolated in the Guatemalan highlands, provided breathtaking views of three volcanoes that embellish perhaps the most beautiful lake in the world, Lake oh God, I can't pronounce it. Atitlan. It sounds like a tit. Atitlan. Lake Atitlan. So that's where Jennifer lived. Three volcanoes. My bad. I thought there was only two. I'm telling you, it's the most beautiful place ever. And it was so cheap. I doubt it is anymore. I doubt there's a cheap place on this planet, to be honest with you. But she bought a house, and oh, she was dating another American who also had a house in Panajachel, and he had a shower. So once in a while, she would bring her daughters over there to shower. But every day, I would walk down to the lake and bathe. I mean, it wasn't really cool to use soap in the lake, so you just swished around and hoped that dirt fell off you. I brushed my teeth in the lake. I was basically camping for the 5th month of my pregnancy. That's a really stupid thing to do, by the way. Like, I think that fucked up my pregnancy because I didn't get enough protein that month. And apparently protein is super important when you're pregnant. So when I got back to America, I binged on cheese, milk, and I don't think I ate any meat. That's the thing. Anyways, I had a great time in Guatemala, apart from the puking every day because something in the rainwater or maybe one of those fresh eggs gave me a parasite because everything I ate, I ended up on the toilet throwing up diarrhea for 3 whole weeks. It was a drag, but it was still interesting. I went to neighboring towns. One of them was called Chichicastenango. And I bought $500 worth of Guatemalan stuff, which is a shitload of bracelets, some cool backpacks, and a couple carpets, like not big carpets, just probably 6 feet by 3 feet, rolled them up, brought them back to America so that I could go back on the dead tour, another dead tour, and sell these bracelets. So I went back to Georgia, ate like crazy, and recuperated. And at this point, almost 6 months pregnant. I went for my first doctor appointment. Can you imagine being pregnant and the first time you go to a doctor, you're almost 6 months pregnant? So I still didn't find out the sex, but they let me see the heartbeat and all that other stuff. All was well. And then I went and bought a 1969 Cadillac hearse. I was inspired by the movie Harold and Maude, one of my favorite movies ever. If you haven't seen Harold and Maude, you really should. You'll understand the obsession with hearse, a hearse. purses once you see it. This was a refurbished 1969 Cadillac hearse, and it was sort of pewter colored, not bright silver, not dull gray, but like a pewter. And it was wall-to-wall carpet inside. I bought it for $1,000 cash, and the guy who sold it to me told me he had it refurbished inside, and he had a speaker business, so he would cart around his speakers. I don't know, but it was fucking cool, and I do have pictures of it. It was so beautiful. So beautiful. So then Benjamin flies over. We're talking now, I think, April. He flew over from Germany to Georgia, and he then later flew in a friend named Matthias, who I hated. He was very rude, zero chivalry, didn't give a fuck that I was a pregnant woman. I guess Benjamin brought him to be one of his workers. So on tour, it was Robert and Benjamin and Matthias and me. But however, me and Matthias and Benjamin set out for a journey to drive across America to California, which was a really bad idea. I let them drive because I was pregnant and tired, so I'm like, I'm gonna sleep in the back. You would think that, you know, a 20-year-old man, and I think Matthias was 19, you would think that these guys could handle driving a hearse. They know when to get oil, they know when to get gas, etc. So I was just sleeping in the back. When we got to Texas, we got pulled over constantly because in 1989, Texas was super, super square still. Unlike now, I would hear the bullhorn, "Get out with your hands up." Like, what the fuck is going on? There was no Grateful Dead stickers on the back of the car, but they thought it was strange that a hearse was driving through their town, or I don't know. So we would get out and they would search the whole car. Zero drugs, of course. But, you know, Ben and Matthias, well, all of us were dressed in like kind of hippie clothes, Guatemalan slash tie-dyes. So they were sure that we had something to hide, but we didn't. So they just let us go, but it was annoying being pulled over all the time. We did stop in New Orleans. I think that's the first time I've been in New Orleans since I was 5 years old. I did tell you that story too, a long time ago in book part one, maybe. So I hadn't been to New Orleans since I was 5 years old, and we took pictures in the old historic parts of New Orleans. And carried on, and like I said, we got to Texas. And then we started getting problems. Guess why? Benjamin and Matthias never checked the oil. They never supplemented the oil supply, so they burnt the engine out, and therefore we were only getting 10 miles to the gallon. So the money we burned through, I didn't even have a credit card at the time, and neither did Benjamin or Matthias. So we were just relying on cash. So they ruined my car, my brand new car. I mean, it wasn't new, it was from 1969, but it was my beautiful car that I had just bought. They ruined my car. I don't know shit when does a car need oil. My dad filled it up before we left Georgia, and I thought that Benjamin and Matthias would know when to take care of it. They didn't. And Matthias was being such a dick. Sometimes we would stop at rest stops so we could all sleep. And I'm like, why are all three of us trying to cram here in the back? Because it was like an upper level in the back. It wasn't just flat in the back. There was a little stoop that went up 2 feet. And then there was, I guess that's what I used as the bed area. And then there was the floor. So I didn't want to sleep, me, Benjamin, and Matthias. And Benjamin didn't have the common sense to say, "No, you're sleeping there because my girl is pregnant, so she's going to sleep up here with me." So I'm like, okay, forget it. I'm going to sleep on the floor. So it's like those two Germans sleeping together in the upper comfort zone of the hearse, and I'm sleeping pregnant on the floor. Really pissed, but I'll tell you something. And any German who's listening to this will know their word chivalry is not in the German vocabulary. They just They really believe in equal rights, so much to the point where they won't open a door for a woman. They seldom compliment a woman. They won't buy a woman a drink. They won't carry something for a woman. They won't say, "Oh, you're pregnant. You can sleep here in the comfortable part." And that was shocking to me at that time. Now I understand because I lived half my life in Germany, but I was really pissed at the time. But I was trapped. I couldn't do anything about it. That was Benjamin's friend. I hated him. I think I was calling him Hitler at that point. I was like really not happy with him. And he was doing insult after insult after insult, like he hated Americans. I'm like, why did you come to America if you hate it here so bad? You know, like he was just Mr. Insult. So if you come at me nice and polite and sweet and everything, I'm the nicest person in the world. But if you start being a dick over and over and over again, well, then I become salty. Salty dot. Anyways, we were visiting the Grand Canyon. I mean, we were kind of driving through the Grand Canyon. We took pictures. There's a part of America where four states meet at one part. I think it's New Mexico, Utah, Colorado, and Nevada. It's been a while. And we took pictures there. And our car really started to have extreme problems in Shiprock, New Mexico. We pulled over there. I have really great pictures of Shiprock. We pulled over there at a gas station in the middle of nowhere, Shiprock, New Mexico. I walk into the gas station, pregnant, obviously pregnant. There's a guy on the phone. Oh, you could tell they're Native American Indians, you know, the way they look. And I wait till the guy gets off the phone and I said, "I'm sorry, we have car trouble. Can I use your phone?" He said, "We don't have a phone." I'm like, "But he's like, "No, we don't have a phone." I'm like, "Okay." So we had to go find change to use the pay phone. And I was calling my dad and he's like, "Well, that's stupid. How can we let it run out of oil?" And we somehow managed to, the car absolutely died, and I took a picture of when it died. Picture of the hearse with a desert in the background, Grand Canyon in the background, steam coming out of the engine, Benjamin and Matthias looking at me. It's a great picture. We managed to roll the hearse as far as we could down this last hill, and that's where we needed help. We had to get somebody that was passing by, waved them down and asked, could they possibly give Matthias a ride to the next phone booth? And we called a tow truck. I also have a picture of the tow truck towing the hearse. I still have it. I just looked at it. It says Jerry's Towing Service. And the name of the town is Camas, Utah. Kamas. Camas. Camas, Utah. So the tow truck pulled us to the center of Camas and parked it in a parking lot of a little convenience store. Convenience store, and went in to try to, I don't know, get supplies and stuff. And coming out of that store was a long-haired lady, so beautiful, dark, long, dark hair. And her name is Diane. And I told her what's happening. And she's like, "Oh my God, you poor thing." And she invited all three of us. She lived in a double wide trailer. She invited us to come stay at her trailer. So her boyfriend at the time towed our hearse to her driveway. And we paid $1,000 to find out what's going on with the car. They said the head gaskets blew and the motor was burnt out because of lack of oil, but it was just throwing money into a big empty hole. It was the saddest thing ever. The hearse never left that place, as far as I know. But we became good friends with Diane. And I'm still friends with Diane. Now she lives in Wyoming. No, wait, where does she live? Hang on. Is it Wyoming? I'm so confused where everybody lives now. Diane Valesque. Wyoming, yes, she lives in Lander, Wyoming now. Her health is not very well because she smokes 3 packs of cigarettes a day, and I complain to her about it all the time. Anyways, me and Diane, Matthias, and Benjamin convinced Benjamin's mom, Frauke, in Germany, to use her credit card to rent us a car. She was not happy, by the way. She was really pissed. But we rented a little car and we drove to Los Angeles. We got lots of pictures of that. We're walking along Venice Beach and in Hollywood. I posed where Marilyn Monroe stuck her hands in the cement. And I even found John Lennon's autograph there on Hollywood Boulevard. And I saw the premiere of their movie Imagine at the Chinese Theater. And Benjamin had a friend named Liesl, not Lisa, Liesl, and her mom. They lived in Pasadena. They lived in Pasadena, LA. And we stayed at their house, which was cool. They had orange trees in their backyard and stuff. I was slightly jealous of Liesl because she was really, really charming and beautiful. And they were very much into Reiki. Reiki. Everybody pronounces it different in Germany. Anyways. And so that was fun. But then we all decided, hey, this is a good gang. When the Dead tour starts, we're all going to do it together. So now we had a big team to sell all of Robert's Guatemalan stuff. So we went on tour, not with a hearse. Robert had a car, and then we bought this beat up brown station wagon for $100 at the first Dead show. Yeah, it was a thing back then that people were just selling cars for $75, $100. It was crazy. Then we started up again in Atlanta. I remember having my sister help me set up Guatemalan stuff and sell them outside of the Atlanta Dead Show. Those two Atlanta Dead shows were March 28th and 29th, 89. Then we started up again without my sister, and we went to Greensboro, North Carolina, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for two shows. That was pretty rough. I saw a lot of police brutality going on. Then we went to Detroit for a couple shows, Cincinnati, Ohio, Louisville, Kentucky, Rosemont, Illinois. That was three shows, Rosemont, Illinois. We never had a break. I mean, in between, I was still going backstage and massaging Steve Parrish and the drummers. And yeah, I think that was somewhere in between. There was Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Milwaukee. I do remember being in Milwaukee because I was singing the Laverne and Shirley theme song. But in Ann Arbor, Michigan, I do remember having to poop in a Taco Bell bag. More on that in a minute. We never stopped. We went to every single show, and it was really exhausting. And that's where I met. Hang on, no. Oh, so Jennifer was back. That's the thing. I met Jennifer on the first tour, and then she came up from Guatemala and was helping us, but she was mainly offering massages in our Guatemalan booth. We had many booths, by the way. Like Robert had expanded. Rather than having one booth with Guatemalan stuff. Oh, God. We had Benjamin and Toby, and then we had some guy from Chile working with Diane at another booth, and me and Liesl at another booth. It was like a franchise at this point. So I wasn't going into many shows at all. We were there outside as vendors. At every Dead show, making money. However, I didn't have to go watch the shows, but I would still go, even pregnant, and massage the drummer's hands now and then, Billy and Mickey, which I was doing on all the previous tours and shows. I was massaging the drummers for free every day to get food and backstage passes. So I still had backstage passes whenever I wanted. I just didn't have time to go watch the shows most of the time. And Benjamin and Robert didn't care about seeing the shows. I don't think Robert, I think Robert might have seen one show. Diane wanted to see the shows, and Lisa wanted to see the shows. So we did take turns, actually. I got everybody free passes, but I didn't let them walk around backstage. I would escort them into the show and then take their pass just so that they could see the show. And yeah, I'm just remembering all the stuff which was going on. So I'm like, sometimes I would be stuck at the vending booth. I remember once in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It was freezing, by the way, so it was not fun. I was wearing so many clothes, and I was alone at the vending booth with all the Guatemalan stuff. I couldn't leave. I had to shit in a Taco Bell bag because when you gotta go, you gotta go. That's how much I was roughing it, all right? Instead of having nice meals and good sleep when you're pregnant, I was like eating a pint of Häagen-Dazs ice cream per day because I was just so hungry, or Taco Bell and this and that, and pooping in Taco Bell bags. Great. And it was very seldom that we got a hotel room, but then I finally got to sleep and have showers. And on show days when there was shows and I had coverage, I could go in. And they'd be like, "Hey, Mickey and Bill want a massage." I didn't have a massage table with me. I would massage them on benches backstage, or they would sit at a chair in the production office, and I would do their backs like that. I was never asking for money. I never once asked the Grateful Dead for money. And there, no one ever assumes. I mean, that your people are like, no, they assume. Sorry. They assume that I'm getting paid from someone else. So, like, it's not the artist's fault. They think that management is paying me, right? So, I'm like massaging the band, and they don't offer money, and I'm too shy to ask for money. So, instead of asking for money, I ask for food. I have free rein in catering, and I ask for backstage passes. So, that was happening year after year. From 83 to 94, I never once got money or asked for money. I was just happy to see the shows for free and get my friends in for free. And I was busy making money selling Guatemalan stuff and bagels and bracelets and stuff, which is so silly. But that's the way it happened. I didn't get into massage because I wanted to make money. It just accidentally happened. And this is how it happened. That's the whole point of this book, actually. I did massage Jerry Garcia's arms and hands on the rare occasion, but he would never take his t-shirt off. He didn't want his back done. And it was so interesting massaging his hand, one of his hand, I think it was his left hand. No, was it right hand? He was missing half of his middle finger. I think he said his brother accidentally chopped it off with an axe. Ouch. But yeah, I got an autograph from Bob Weir, but I didn't exactly carry a bunch of cameras around with me, and they were kind of like, you know how the Vikings had several gods? Well, the Grateful Dead were like several gods to their fans. I'm not putting anyone above God, Jesus Christ. I'm just saying they were like a religious thing. It was weird, so I just felt awkward asking for a picture. I just wouldn't dare. I got over those days, didn't I? But yeah, so I was massaging the drummers. And by the way, the drummers still use my company sometimes when they're on tour. Mickey Hart and Billy Kreutzmann, they use my massage company when they tour. I was going to massage Bob Weir once, about 10 years ago, and his wife, who looks a little bit like Shania Twain, she's like, Bobby was on my chair, actually, about ready to get a back massage. And she walks in and said, "Bobby, unless you want your balls handed to you in a paper bag, I would get off that massage chair right now." Boom, he was gone. Okay. Behind every great man is a strong woman. I guess that's the case here. So, anyhow, where are we now? So, I'm on tour with Ben and Robert and Liesl and Diane. Oh, and there was a beautiful English girl from Cornwall, UK. Her name was Connie, I think. And then there was some girl from Switzerland trying to make the moves on Benjamin. What was her name? Katya? I'm like, bitch, you need to back up. I mean, I didn't say bitch, but she was always hovering around Ben. She was not hot. I would tell you if she was hot, because Connie was gorgeous. Diane was gorgeous. Katya was extremely eccentric, weird. She's probably one of those pagan witches by now. She's very weird. I was like, no. You need to get off the Benjamin. Just keep your distance from Benjamin, please. I had to fight for my man. Especially when you're pregnant. You're kind of territorial, you know? So then, after the touring, there was just one hurdle after the other. Okay, one hurdle, it just never ended. The drama. Like stuff was being lost. We were being locked out of our car. We were up all night because we couldn't find a hotel. Again, we were still sleeping, sitting up. Me, Robert, and Benjamin sitting up in the front seat of their station wagon. One time, Robert, the gang earned $30,000 cash one night. Robert, so tired, we were pulling out of the parking lot and somebody was yelling at us and we rolled down the window and like, what? They're like, there's a bag on top of your car. We stopped the car. The plastic bag, trash bag, tied in a knot on top of the car had $30,000 cash in it. So that's how overtired we were. Duh. So I made about $5,000 on that tour, cash, $5,000. And then I had to use a lot of it for hotels and all this stuff. But then we moved, okay, so what happened? Went back to Georgia with our findings and we relaxed in the pool and everything. And then my mom was really making drama. She was like, listen, I'm freaking out here. You have to come up here to have the baby. I'm like, but we're all really nested in down here in Georgia. We're like enjoying my dad's pool and my dad and my stepmom. Everyone's like being nice to us. And Benjamin fit in. Well, my brother, Chester, and Zachary were making fun of Benjamin's banana boat, freaking, European bathing suit. You know how Europeans wear those nut hugger speedos? I have pictures of them like throwing buckets of water on Ben in the pool because they would make just, I mean, it was all in good fun. They would make fun of Benjamin's speedo. I didn't care. I thought there was nothing ever could be wrong with Benjamin. He was so beautiful. But he was a little bit critical. Sometimes he would say, wow, your nose is so big. Or in this light, your head looks giant. I'm like, thanks. So Germans are so honest that they have no filter at all. And that can be kind of sad for women, I mean, I don't want someone to lie and say, oh, you're perfect, because no one is. But Germans are very critical. You got to have thick skin to live in Germany, let me tell you. There's no political correctness, there's no fake compliments or anything like that. And I'm glad I lived over there because it really did toughen me up. It didn't make me punctual, although they tried. So, trying to think, we moved up to my mom's when I was still on the Grateful Dead tour at 8 months pregnant, by the way. Okay? So at the end of the 8th month, I moved up to my mom's. And instead of Benjamin flying with me to New Hampshire, Benjamin flew from Georgia back to Germany, and I flew up to New Hampshire. So we're in the 9th month. We're talking like late May. 89, I moved back to Dover, New Hampshire to mill on the river, one mill on the river. And my mom moved into a different apartment there. She had a bigger apartment at Mill on the River. And I was really missing Benjamin. It was horrible. And he flew back to Boston. And I remember pacing in the airport waiting for him. I'm like, what is taking so long? There's no cell phones, okay? You got to keep remembering that. I'm pacing back and forth, pregnant as fuck, wearing Birkenstocks, big heavy belly. I had just had a baby shower. Oh no, baby shower hadn't happened yet because Ben was there. Hang on. I'm waiting for him to come through. And I keep asking the staff at the airport, and now I'm there 5 hours already. I'm like, what's going on? Because I'm about to give birth, And then an immigration officer came out to me and said, are you the fiance of Benjamin Stein, are you his girlfriend, whatever? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, you need to come with us. I'm like, what's happening? Well, we found out that Benjamin had been working in America and he's not a citizen. I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah. Apparently, Benjamin got paid $150 by somebody on tour with a check. Somebody wrote a check out to Benjamin Stein for $150. He never cashed it. He kept it in his wallet, went to Germany, came back from Germany. It was still in his wallet. And immigration picked him and searched his wallet and found that check. So they wanted to send him back to Germany because he had apparently been working in America. Okay. Yes, it's wrong. I guess that's true. But compared to all the stuff that's happening now, was it really that bad? I was crying hysterically at this point. Please, no. Oh my God, you can't send it back. They're like, no, we have to send it back. I'm like, oh my God. They're like, okay, if you promise you're going to get married within 48 hours and you can prove it and fax us your marriage license, we will prolong the deport. We will not deport him. Okay, we'll put it off. We'll let him stay. Oh my God. So Benjamin's jet lagged as hell. He just landed and he's been through hell at like 8 hours at the airport in Boston. 8 hours at this point. On the way home to New Hampshire, we stopped at a Sears. Actually, it was in New Hampshire. We got to New Hampshire, we went to the closest Sears, bought a really boring looking suit, and got home, went and got some Mary Kay rings. Or was it Mary Kay? No, Mary Kay's makeup. What was it? It was some cheesy brand of gold rings. Really, really not expensive. They were like $40 for two gold rings. And my mom let me use her wedding dress, which is hilarious because it was a drop waisted 20s looking, those dresses in the 20s. I was like a drop waisted dress. How those dresses are. I wore that. And I'm like ready to burst. My belly's so big. I wore her dress. It has lots of little pearls on it and very cute. And we went to a flower garden in Dover, New Hampshire. And how do I remember the date? Because it was in the newspaper as once in a thousand years this date could happen. We got married, and I'm not kidding. I have the newspaper article to prove it. We got married at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So what does that mean? 1:23 p.m. and 45 seconds. The justice of the peace made sure it was exactly at that time because it was a cool situation. Flower garden, no big whoop. Jennifer Flannery was there, my Uncle Billy, my mom. I think my Uncle Jack came up. My dad didn't come up from Georgia though. It was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then 6, 7, 8, 9. So June 7th, 1989. I know in Europe they do the date first, which is correct. You should do the date, month, and year. That makes sense, smaller to bigger. But in America, we do the month and then the date, which is really stupid. So it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 is when we got married. And then we went back to my mom's for the little reception. And Benjamin and I had our wedding dance in my mom's living room. And the song we danced to was the Beatles. When I'm 64. And then after the dance, my mom whispers in my ear, she goes, I know you're in love and everything's cute. She goes, but let me tell you something. The first time you marry for love and the second time you marry for money. I was like, that's so mean. That's not gonna happen. I love Ben. I'm never gonna get married again. Boy, did I prove her wrong. I got married twice for love instead of money. Anyways, I think the next day my Aunt Irene, my mom's sister, said, oh, come on, let's go shopping, just you and I. We're going to go to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, which is a very cute little town. And then we're going to go out to eat at my favorite Greek restaurant. I can't remember what it's called now, but they had the best Greek salad in this place. So we walked around Portsmouth. I waddled around with my big belly. And we went into this restaurant. We went upstairs, And everyone screamed, "Hey!" Was a surprise baby shower. It was really a surprise. They did so well hiding it from me. Everybody was there. Benjamin, Jennifer Flannery, my Aunt Sue, my Aunt Irene, my mom, my mom's husband Howard. I think my sister and brother were there. There was lots of people there, and they all had gifts. It was really, really overwhelming. Oh, my Aunt Karen was even there. She drove up from Connecticut. She was there, yeah. I seen pictures of it. Think. Now I have to go back. Was she there? Because I think I have a funny picture of her pretending to put a diaper on me. Anyways, I got so many gifts, and I couldn't figure out how the hell we were going to get all of this stuff to Germany. Because why did we go to Germany? I had a really rocky birth. On June 19th, way, way early in the morning, I couldn't breathe. I was like, I went to the emergency room. They're like, "Oh, it's probably just indigestive." They gave me Maalox or some white liquid to drink. I went back home. I was kneeling. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't get comfortable. I was on my side. I couldn't get comfortable. I was like, "Oh my God, I can't go on. I can't go on." I went back to the emergency room. It wasn't indigestion or gas. I was having preeclampsia, the HELLP syndrome. It's called the HELLP syndrome preeclampsia. And I had taken some natural birthing classes when I was in Dover. And I went to La Leche League meetings. I planned on breastfeeding and doing everything natural, no drugs, no painkillers for the birth. Well, they did so many tests on me, and I was exhausted, by the way. Like, I didn't get any sleep the night before. And they're like, "Well, we have to t we think we're gonna have to have a C-section." I'm like, "What? No, oh my God." Like, "Yeah, otherwise you're gonna die. We tested your blood platelets and they're too low. So if you had a vaginal birth or something, you bleed to death. So we have to do it now." So it was a very split decision. And they gave me an epidural. They were poking needles in my back. And then I could still feel it though. They're like, "Oh, you're supposed to be numb now from the waist down. We don't want to put you out," but I could still feel everything. So they knocked me out. First of all, they gave me a lot of drugs to be numb from the waist down. And because I could still feel pain, they gassed me and put me out. So I didn't know, remember anything from the birth. I just remember waking up and being held a little bundle and being told it was a daughter, which was amazing because my mother was 100% sure it was going to be a son. She made blue ribbons all over the bassinet and bought a bunch of blue baby clothes, blue curtains, all this shit. It wasn't a boy. It was a little baby girl named Jasmine. I think she was born 2 weeks too early, and she was only 6 pounds 9 ounces or something. Little baby girl. Benjamin was over the moon happy. We were super happy, and yeah. So then, it got really strenuous being in my mom's 2-bedroom apartment because me and Benjamin and the baby had one room. My mom and Howard had one room, and my brother and sister were. Well, so if I'm 21, my sister is 7 years younger than me. No, did I turn? Yeah, I was still 21. I turned 22 in October. Anyways, my sister was, what's 21 minus 7? Oh my God. I don't know, whatever. Add it up. And my brother's 9 years younger than me. So they're in the house, and my cousins, Crystal and Rachel, are visiting all the time. It's a loud fucking house with a lot of people in and out. My daughter was screaming all the time. She wasn't getting enough food. And I couldn't understand why. I kept calling La Leche League. I'm like, "How come my baby's crying? I'm breastfeeding her like 24 hours a day. How many wet diapers does she have?" "Seven." "Well, that's fine. She's fine. She's just crying." But I had to literally flip eggs while breastfeeding. I was breastfeeding the baby, holding the baby with one arm while flipping eggs because, I don't know, everybody else was just too busy. Nobody was like bringing me food, whatever. I don't mind, but it was really stressful. And Benjamin couldn't work because he
didn't have a green card. We got married, but that takes a while to process, you know? So I went and I asked for like some assistance. I went to the town. I said, can we get some, I don't know, food stamps or something? Because I can't work. I just gave birth. And he can't work because he doesn't have a green card. We don't want to make that mistake again, you know, having him work. Nope, you're married. That's not our problem. I was like, but it's going to take, that's not our problem. They said, leave. Oh my God, was I so pissed that my own country wouldn't help me. I needed help, temporary assistance. You know, throw me a bone, please. They wouldn't, though. They wouldn't. So me and Ben were like, you know what? Why should we stay here if they're not even going to help us? It's going to be like a year before he gets his green card, and I can't just go get a job right away, you know? And I couldn't stay living with my mom. It was too chaotic. She knew everything better, right? So I went back the next day and I'm like, you know what? My husband just left me because of all this stress. So now you have to help me. We don't believe it. I'm like, well, it's true. Will you sign an affidavit? Maybe. But he's gone. So now I'm single. Thank you. They gave me $1,000. And with that $1,000, we bought tickets to Germany. And I never moved back until permanently until 2015. So there's that. That's why I moved to Germany because they wouldn't help me. Plus, Benjamin wanted to study architecture. He wanted to resume his studies. He never felt comfortable in America. Not that he hates America, but you know, he's from Germany. He's from Düsseldorf. It's a wonderful place. They have the best bread in the world. Everything was clean and safe at the time. And I didn't speak any German, but I was like, you know what? My own country, he's not helping me. So moved to Düsseldorf for a couple months until Benjamin found an apartment suitable in Berlin. And then we moved to Berlin. But when I arrived in Düsseldorf, the first thing the family said, I mean, I couldn't speak German, but I could see on their faces at the airport that they were horrified at how thin my baby was. They were screaming and they were in shock. And I had to breastfeed the baby the whole time on the plane, by the way. See, the thing is that most people don't know. And when I was 18, when I had to live with my mom for a while, my mom was very jealous of my big boobs because I had naturally giant Italian tits, double D. Like my bra fit on my head. My mom kept nagging at me that they're just going to get big and saggy. They have to. They got to get taken care of. Your tits are too big. But meanwhile, she was taking pictures of me and sending them to Playboy. And when we would go out in public, guys would ask me what size bra did I wear. But my mom had a little size B. My mom had a B cup. She was jealous over my tits. She badgered me, kept saying, you have to get them made smaller, you have to get them made smaller. So she brought me to a doctor in Dover, New Hampshire, who specializes in wrist surgery. And she asked if you know, it was possible to get a breast reduction. She had medical insurance that would cover it, blah, blah, blah. But in the same consultation, she asked the doctor, would you be able to put some of her tissue into mine? Because I have, and he looked at her, he took his glasses off and looked at my mom long and hard, and he said, no, that's not possible, Mrs. Cootie. Guess what? A couple days later, I was in the hospital. I didn't want to have this happen, but my mom was very, very domineering and insisted on it that it was the best thing to do. So I had a breast reduction at age 18. They removed 2.5 pounds per breast. Each side, 2.5 pounds removed. I still have all the paperwork because the scarring was horrific, and I tried to sue the doctor a couple years later, and it didn't work because my mother's medical insurance paid for it. It was really bad scarring that I had to live with for years until I had it fixed later in Berlin. It's another story. So I had keloid scarring because the doctor used staples to sew it together. And this is why my daughter was starving, by the way. Even though I was breastfeeding constantly after she was a couple weeks old, she had like a little growth spurt, wanted more milk. But if they remove most of your milk tissue or milk glands, you can't increase like a normal breast would. So she was only getting half of the nutrients and calories that she needed. So when we landed in Germany, I didn't go directly to Benjamin's mom's house. I went to the hospital. So my first experience landing in Germany with the baby was go to the hospital. I went to the hospital. I can't speak German and nobody speaks fucking English, but they weighed Jasmine, they weighed my baby, and they were, ah, everyone was shocked. And I felt like such a piece of shit. But up until that point, I was just doing what Lelechi League told me to do. And I didn't want to give her formula. I thought it was bad. But guess what? They weighed her and gave her some shot in her head, some kind of antibiotics. I don't know what it was, but I was screaming and crying. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe my little baby's, here in the hospital and getting a shot in her head, and I can't speak German, and they're testing her blood and all this stuff. But then they got a lady named Renata Abstoss. I think that was her name, Renata Abstoss, the head of Lelechi League Germany. They got her to call me in the hospital in my room. And she talked to me and she said, listen, let's make a compromise. All right, you don't have to give up breastfeeding. We'll give her formula. Or no, you give her the breast first, both sides, until your breasts are empty, and then we'll finish it up with formula. We'll do that every single time. So I gave her the breast, and then I gave her first bottle of formula. She sucked that down faster than lightning. It was like, and after she sucked it down, she slept for 4 hours, and I was just staring at her like, is she okay? Because she hadn't been sleeping at all. She was so hungry and irritated that she wasn't sleeping. So that was a very stressful first month of her life. For the first week and a half, the breast was enough for her. But then it was just constant crying. Like I remember going to the bathroom with her on my breast. I remember taking a bath with her on my breast. Like she had to constantly be on my breast, otherwise she was screaming. And it was my first baby, so I didn't know any better. But so from then on, it was breast and then formula. And oh my God, life was so much better. And the funny thing is, you have to empty the breast completely in order to make another full batch, right? So if she didn't suck everything dry, I would have to express it with my hand or have Benjamin empty my breast. Sometimes I would squirt it in his coffee. It was really funny. So, but I did that for 2 years. I breastfed Jasmine for 2 whole years. Until she said, I don't need booby, no more booby. And I was like, okay. So she had all the immunities from the breast milk to start off her meal, and then she would get the rest of her meal with formula. So, yeah, I tried my best with that one. And when I see pictures of her when she's like 3 or 4 weeks old, yeah, just crying comes to mind, because how could I have not known that she, like, how stupid was I that she'd, I was like, oh, she's not getting enough. And my mom also, she should have said no, give her some formula. But like, everyone's like, no, she's getting breast milk, that's enough. If you have a breast reduction operation, it's not enough. You have to do both. So I highly want to stress the fact, I don't think breast reduction is a good idea. It's not. Don't do it, especially if you want to breastfeed. If you're all grown up and your kids are all grown up, yeah, go for it. But if you want to breastfeed your babies, do not do it. Nice idea, Mom. But that could be another whole chapter just about the boobs. Anyways, I'm going to end book part 8 right here. And when I resume with book part 9, we will start off where I moved in with Benjamin's mother, Frauke, in Dusseldorf. And how fun that was. Happy Independence Day to all of my American friends. Stay free.